Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Wednesday, September 10th, 2014. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Defense wraps up cross-examination of Capone friend David Stone in Capone's murder trial in Moscow. Panhandle leaders want planning grant money for possible oil train derailment disaster in northern Idaho. And Pullman City Council approves six-year transit plan. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. Defense attorney D. Ray Barker spent most of the day today cross-examining 51-year-old David Stone of Moscow, the state's main witness in the murder trial of 53-year-old Moscow resident Charles A. Capone. Capone is accused of killing his wife, Rachel Anderson, in 2010. Most of the questioning focused on numerous lies Stone told police, a grand jury, and his wife in an attempt to cover up the killing of Rachel Anderson, which he said he witnessed April 16, 2010. Stone said he followed Capone's orders in helping him dispose of the body and keeping quiet because he feared for the safety of his family, and Capone had threatened him several times. According to a Lewiston Tribune website live blog from the trial, Barker repeatedly asked Stone about the nature of his fear. Stone read from transcripts of police interviews and grand jury interrogations and noted Stone confronted Capone about harassing Anderson at one point, but did not intervene when he saw Capone strangling her. Stone replied, "I don't feel that'd be a really good or fair comparison." Stone said Capone never directly threatened to kill him, but would periodically ask after the killing if he's keeping quiet. Stone repeated his assertion today that pretty much everything he told investigators were lies until he decided to come clean and, quote, do the right thing, unquote, by telling the whole story. Although Stone quoted Capone saying he knew he had a family immediately after he killed Anderson, Stone testified today he did not fear Capone would do anything to his teenage stepdaughter when Capone gave her a ride in the days following the alleged murder, because there was no reason for Capone to want to hurt her. When Barker said the defense had no more questions for Stone, prosecutor William Thompson questioned him for a short period. Thompson asked if all the testimony he gave at this trial is true and honest, and he said it is to the best of his recollection. The court adjourned for the day about 2:30, and the trial will resume at 9 a.m. tomorrow at the Latah County Courthouse before Judge Carl B. Carrick. Officials from three northern Idaho counties are seeking an Idaho Transportation Department grant to create a regional response plan for any Bakken oil train derailment that might occur. The Bonner County Daily Bee reports Boundary, Bonner, and Kootenai County officials are concerned about the increasing number of oil trains passing through the panhandle. The paper quoted Bonner County Emergency Management Director Bob Howard saying, "The Bakken oil issue is what brought this to the surface because we have so much of that going through our communities. We want to be as prepared as we can to respond to a spill." Bonner County Commissioner Glenn Bailey said, "The hazardous materials that are coming across our railroads, that are coming across our highways, are not declining. They are projected to increase monumentally." The ITD grant would be administered by the Idaho Bureau of Homeland Security. Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railway Hazardous Materials Field Operations and Emergency Response Manager Justin Piper said the railroad, one of two east-west main lines that pass through the panhandle, says the company has firefighting foam in fire trailers that work well when fighting oil fires. Piper also said the company has 220 full-time hazardous material responders on staff and can fly in industrial firefighters from Fort Worth, Texas, if necessary. He said, "As an accident happens, we will mobilize more resources than what's necessary. We can always call them off if they're not needed." Montana Rail Link spokesperson Casey Calkins told the paper, The nearest response materials the railroad has in place are in Missoula, but that's likely to change. Calkin said, we'll probably have some at Thompson Falls when this is all said and done. A coalition of Western Washington tribes has sent a letter to Governor Jay Inslee saying they are asking the Environmental Protection Agency to write water pollution rules for the state. Tribal leaders met with EPA Region 10 head Dennis McLaren Monday. This summer, Inslee said he would set the fish consumption rate for the state at 175 grams per day, a number which will translate into stricter water pollution limits. The tribes say that's not enough. The letter to Inslee says it is incomprehensible that the state would consider changing the cancer risk rate in state standards to a rate that is 10 times less protective. Essentially, the proposal modifies the fish consumption rate to reflect higher levels of consumption in our state, but trades this improvement for a less protective cancer risk rate. Inslee is under pressure from Boeing and other industries who say stricter pollution rules could hurt economic development in Washington. Montana Governor Steve Bullock ordered future drilling restrictions to prevent further decreases in sage-grouse populations in the state. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is considering listing sage-grouse, which has lost more than half its historic habitat to agriculture, energy, exploration, and development, for listing under the Endangered Species Act. The birds have also suffered from outbreaks of West Nile virus in the 11 western states and two Canadian provinces where they live. The order establishes no occupancy areas surrounding sage-grouse breeding grounds in Montana up to 0.6 miles away. The restrictions are similar to Wyoming rules, which have a 1 mile radius meant to prevent disturbances of breeding grounds and increase breeding success rates. Western Watersheds Project spokesperson John Osher said energy companies will be forced to change their activities to comply with the Montana rules, but he said the restrictions are not enough to reverse the sage-grouse's decline. An attorney representing Syringa Trailer Park residents has filed a contempt of court motion against Syringa Mobile Home Park owner Magar E. Magar in Second District Court in Moscow. Attorney Maureen Laughlin filed the motion in the class action suit against Magar Monday. Residents sued over the lack of potable water at the Syringa Mobile Home Park on Robinson Lake Road for 3 months last winter and are seeking compensation for expenses incurred supplying potable drinking water to their homes. Laughlin said Magar, who has admitted his liability for the infrastructure failures at Syringa, has not complied with Latah County Second District Court Judge John Stegner's November order approving the mediation agreement, which Magar signed. Magar has since asked the court to allow him to evict the occupants of four homes in the Robinson Lake Road trailer park. Stegner said he expects to hear the eviction proceeding, but said allowing the evictions would mean lifting the protection order of Syringa residents, which could influence the case in Magar's favor. Magar wants to evict four park residents for failure to live up to the rental agreements they signed. Laughlin said almost every park resident has missed at least 1 month payment, and she thinks Magar might be retaliating against certain tenants. At Monday's hearing, Latah County Building Inspector Eric Pa said the water at the park is drinkable, but the quality of the water is still problematic. Pa said Magar has missed several Idaho Department of Water quality deadlines for system repairs. Stegner ordered an October 1st hearing for Magar to be informed of his rights in the case and possibly to make a plan for a contempt hearing. Stegner then set a trial date for February 18th next year to address damages to park residents. The Pullman City Council last night approved a 6-year Pullman Transit Development Plan. Transit Manager Michael Wagner said the city recently received a grant to convert some routes to 40-foot buses instead of the usual 35-foot bus length.
It's basically designed so that if you have an enhancement in capacity, you qualify for the grant. So moving from 35 to 40 is giving us a larger capacity to move more people more quickly, so it makes it a much easier thing for us to qualify for. So the 35s basically are really older part of our fleet, and the 35s are being used in our Tripper program, which we're doing for the school system, and they are capable, obviously, of filling in anytime they need to up on campus. We're trying to keep our larger buses in the routes that are very specific to moving a lot of people very quickly. So they're specifically up on the express routes. And anything we do in town that has a high volume, we also continue to use the 40s on those. We are trying very hard not to use the 40s in the upper parts of the city where we're up on the hills or on tight curves, and we haven't found that we need to do that. So the 35s have allowed us to make those changes, and the 40s have given us more capacity. So I think it's the best of both worlds.
That was Pullman Transit Manager Michael Wagner at last night's Pullman City Council meeting. Wagner said Washington State University recently cut the amount of money it pays to Pullman Transit in return for free bus passes for students and employees.
The year before, we had not presented any cost increases, and that was helpful to them, and we were able to do that. Then this next budget year, this cycle, we needed about 10%, and they were not able to do that fully with their student funds. So we readjusted what we needed to do in our routes and in that kind of thing to accommodate that particular thing, and we've actually created that for it. So they haven't pulled back as much as they've just said we don't have the funding capabilities, and we worked with them to try to solve that.
The reduction in university money resulted in some cuts in service, including cutting the late-night buses service. Wagner also said the transit system is in an ongoing process to replace old transit shelters.
When we look at where the locations of shelters are, often, especially if we're going to replace them, we have to think a lot about some of the ADA requirements and some of the new fiscal requirements as far as the city is concerned in the curbing and the areas where those are placed. So, yes, we would definitely be looking at that. A lot of times you can grandfather in shelters that are older in those locations, but as we renew them and we put new shelters in, we have to replace those.
Pullman Transit Manager Michael Wagner. The Pullman City Council last night approved the six-year transit plan unanimously. Some Pullman landlords and property managers are deciding to prohibit recently legalized recreational cannabis in their rental units. Many landlords allow cigarette smoking in their units or at least on their property. Nothing in Initiative 502, which legalized recreational cannabis, prohibits property managers from banning marijuana use at their apartments. Part-time manager of Willroo Apartments, Cindy Balades, told the Daily News, "It's so new that nobody knows what to do." Cougar Crest manager Mary Ann Cowie said, "A change in the smoking policy could happen in the future, even though there is no current smoking policy at Cougar Crest right now." Cowie said there has been an increase in tenant complaints about apartment mates using cannabis. She attributes this to before smoking marijuana became legal, users took precautions to conceal cannabis use and took their smoking outside or elsewhere. Cowie said, "Now that it's legal, there's less cooperation between them." Glendimer Apartments manager John Burns said their ban on smoking came from years of burns and bad smells associated with smoking. Burns said cannabis is no different, quite possibly worse. He said it's every bit as bad as regular cigarette smoke. Speaking of the smell, he said the smell is much more pungent in the apartment. Summit Realty co-owner Jeanette Gordon said their reason for banning marijuana is because federal law still prohibits it. Summerhill Rentals manager Michelle Utzman expressed surprise they have not received more complaints. Utzman said Summerhill only gets about 2 complaints per semester, and this year they have received none. She said, "We expected a huge increase in complaints." KRFP will broadcast Pacifica's live coverage of President Barack Obama's war speech tonight from 6 to 7 p.m. Flashpoints will be heard a half hour later than usual at 7 p.m. Between the Lines, normally heard Wednesdays at 6, will be heard tomorrow at 10 a.m. here on KRFP, this week only. along with its regular repeat time Mondays at 5 a.m. This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian News Magazine, normally heard Wednesdays at 7:30, will be heard tomorrow at 10:30 a.m. this week only. Well, thanks for listening to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next, President Barack Obama's speech. I'm Lee Robartis. Jim Roach assisted with tonight's newscast. Have a pleasant evening. This is KRFP Moscow Pullman.